I was afraid I wouldn't make a living as an actor because I was young and I was big and I was getting character parts, and I didn't. If I was always auditioning up against guys who were, you know, the real thing and who were 20 years older than I was. So I had a feeling it was going to be a major struggle, and I had this facility for writing, and I got lots of job offers, so I thought I would do it that way. And I never stopped the acting, but I put the writing on the front burner because that was where the income was.
The Bold, Big and Beautiful and Blue podcast, The Feast of Fools. On today's show, we have the hilarious and fabulous,
the incomparable,
Bruce Vilanch, comedian, writer for the Oscars for television, and star of Hairspray on Broadway. He's going to be talking about his up-and-coming visit to Chicago, Illinois, to be the headline for the 2006 International Mr. Leather Competition.
We talked to him about Celebrity Fit Test,
gay Hollywood and stereotypes,
what it's like to write for the Oscars,
and what his vagina would say if it could write its own monologue. I'm Fausto Furnos.
And I'm Mark Villian.
Stay tuned. Hello.
I call a fool.
Hey.
Yeah, yes, you have.
Hi, Bruce. How you doing?
All right. How you?
We are so ecstatic and thrilled to be talking to such a comedy legend today.
Oh, my God.
Well, my God. Where are you right now? Describe your surroundings to our listeners.
I am in my office in my lovely canyon home in Nichols Canyon, high in the Hollywood Hills, and I am fighting off the advances of two pug puppies.
Oh,
A fawn named Tallulah and a black one named Hattie.
I was going to say the other name was going to be Bankhead.
No, we were named after a famous lesbian couple. Because they're two girls, and they're vying for attention. The black one is 4 months, and the white one is 3 months. So right away there's tension.
Now,
right away, there's sibling rivalry because they're not really sisters.
Now, Bruce, you are a Chi-Town homie, right? You got your start writing for the Chicago Tribune.
I did, actually.
Is this true, right?
A paper called Chicago Today, which, if you were there in the 60s and 70s, was the old American. And it became a Today, and then the Trib owned it, and they closed it, and I moved over to the Trib. But I've been gone there for 150 years.
Oh, and you were reincarnated several times.
I left town before there were cell phones, you know, before there were faxes. I mean,
you were.
I was there in the Paleozoic era.
You were here in the
Starbucks, for God's sake.
And the Newhart days, I think, right? Or the Good Times days.
Yeah, right. That's right, the Newhart days. That's what it looked like. L crossing that river.
It still looks like that today.
But the Sun-Times building's gone, right?
It is gone. Yeah, they tore it down. It's going to be a Trump Tower. Trump's
building his thing, yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And when you started writing comedy, you went and saw Bette Midler perform, and you wrote a review of it, and she loved it so much, she brought you on.
This is true.
And where did you... She did a lot of bathhouse performancing back in the day.
She did one. But it seems like a lot now.
Oh, really?
One's enough.
As a result of her ascension from the baths, the bathhouses, of course, the country put in nightclubs. It mm-hmm. didn't last terribly long, except I think in Chicago, still, man's country.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we just did a show where we brought in a microphone and walked around man's country.
I even performed at man's country.
In a towel?
No, in a very large T-shirt.
Of course, it would have to be a T-shirt, wouldn't it?
I recall, when I was there, Man's Country had like it was like an old lodge hall or something, but I mean, it has an actual theater in it. I mean, there was like a ballroom with a stage.
Oh yeah, it still is that way.
Yeah, that's where we did the show. I mean, at the Continental Baths, Bette just performed at one Tubbs, which was the Continental Baths in New York, and that had a nightclub only because the building was 100 years old back then, and there was a Turkish bath that was inactive, and next to it there was like a nightclub. And the reason that the Turkish bath and the nightclub were inactive was when you turned on the heat for the Turkish bath, it inadvertently heated up the nightclub as well. So they couldn't rent out the nightclub separately and have run the Turkish bath. So the building owner gave the Continental Baths guy the club. He said, "Here, you can have this club too."
Well, so did your relationship with Bette Midler sort of profoundly change your career as a comedian and as a writer?
Yeah, well, sure. I mean, I had no career before that. I mean, I was a journalist after a bet. And as I started writing for her, and suddenly I became a person who writes this kind of stuff, a special material writer, a comedy writer, a patter writer, whatever they call it. And she was my first actual client. And she was like a sponge because the people around her were immensely talented. Barry Manilow was her piano player.
Yeah.
And Melissa Manchester and Luther Vandross were the backup singers. And at one point, Peter Allen was her opening act, and the Pointer Sisters sang for her. And
God.
Quite a Norma Kamali designed the drag, and Michael Bennett did the dances. I mean, it was a lot of people. She was quite the Petri dish.
And
incubation going on. And so I started writing for all those people, and that eventually got me to Hollywood because her dresser's brother started Manhattan Transfer. And we put their act together, and they got a television series way back when Cher had her own show. They were the summer replacement.
And did you write for Cher's show as well?
I wrote for Cher's show. In fact, Bette was on the pilot.
Interesting.
Cher's show was Bette and Elton and Flip.
Well, you know who an interesting person that we just recently interviewed was? Terry Garr. And she got her start on that show as well. It was one of her starts.
Well, she was on Sonny and Cher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is a different program then.
Then they broke up. Sonny and Cher broke up, and Cher got her own show, and Sonny got his own show. But Cher's show was a big hit, and Sonny's kind of disappeared after a few weeks. But they had at one point they broke up, and then they got back together again, and did the show. It was like we're divorced, but we're friends. And I wrote some of it then. Terry was on it, I think, from the beginning. Actually.
Well, that's kind of like Terry McMillan on Oprah recently. I don't know if you caught that. It's just sitting there with the guy who got her groove back.
Right, yes. It turns out was
on the down low,
plowing another field altogether.
And they said that they had taken a hot bath together the night before the Oprah shit taping.
Yes.
And I thought that was really odd, don't you?
Yeah.
I don't know. I want to bring this up.
Did you see the interview?
No. I've lost track of all those over down low interviews.
She still doesn't get it.
You're going to be coming here to Chicago to host. You're sort of the headline for the International Male Leather Contest.
And it's a great country.
What are you planning on? First of all, sort of explain people. International Male Leather describes itself as extraordinary sexual experiences and a conference of that.
That's why I'm going. I've always wanted to see what it's like. Actually, I was in Chicago a couple of years ago doing a benefit for Cup, who was kind of on his last legs, and the Jews were throwing a benefit for him, and so you know I joined my fellow Jews.
A benefit for who?
A big black tie dinner at the Conrad, and which happened to be the host hotel for IML that very same night.
No, this is a Cub. It's not the Chicago Cubs.
No, Irv Kupcinet.
What is that?
Irv Kupcinet was the Walter Winchell of Chicago. He wrote a column for the Sun-Times.
Oh, this is a person. Okay, I was thinking it was an organization.
Person. No, when you said Cup in those, it meant everybody knew who you were talking about.
Okay.
It was kind of like saying, I don't know, Stedman.
Okay.
So can you give us a tease on what to expect for your performance at IML?
Well, I'm doing it because I was there doing this benefit with the Jews for Cup, and the IML were the only other people at the hotel. And so you have to imagine these the Jews quietly entering this hotel through a phalanx of guys in leather, guys wearing sort of like, you know, leather jockstraps and captain's hats and chains. And in the midst of all this come all these people in black tie and gowns, and going to honor the legendary Jewish columnist. Larry King was emceeing, and there were lots of legendary Jewish entertainers.
I'm sure Larry had a blast.
It was a culture clash, the likes of which you've rarely seen. I'm hoping I can duplicate that in some way.
Now, is Larry King? Did Larry King get a little play afterwards? Or?
Did Larry King?
I'd love for you to fist me.
Talk about down low. Everything on Larry King is down low.
So you're going to be doing stand-up, and are you going to do it like old?
Yeah, I'm going to be that.
Because you know what happens in this contest, right?
Yeah, well, sort of. Give me some more.
You know what you're going to have to do, right? Because, I mean, well, there's all sorts of, like, fisting bottoms and all sorts
spanking,
of
spanking, guys wrapped up in cellophane.
Electrodes. And
oh, I can't wait.
Tit clamps.
Oh, I can't wait.
It's a smorgasbord of freaks.
I think you're gonna have an easy time with it. I think the show is gonna write itself.
I mean, I don't have to do all that much time, so I mean, they kind of want me to like be the filler, I think, probably while they're, you know, while they're reloading the enema bags. I'm just sort of sandwiched in there. But I am looking for an appropriate ensemble.
What do you think? I mean, are you going to wear like a... Because you're a man of a billion T-shirts, right? How many actual T-shirts do you have?
Well, I haven't really counted, but I mean, I got about a couple of thousand here in the house, and then I have the Home for Aged T-shirts out in the San Fernando Valley, which is where the ones that I can't part with go and live out the rest of their days until the worms get them.
So the Bruce Valanche T-shirt museum.
Whatever we establish first. My assistant says you're an eBay auction waiting to happen.
I would think so. So what are you planning on wearing for the IML show?
Yeah, I don't
know.
I'm accepting all the suggestions. I thought of, I don't know, just being bound and gagged. It'll be something thematic, something that will. They're expecting a T-shirt, and they're expecting something that will reflect the greater glory of the organization. So I have to actually hunker down and think about it.
You could do like a, you know, like sort of Madonna and have the word bitch, but you know, or a mother. And then the back fucker or something like that, and maybe fisting, and then on the back bottom or something like that.
Could. Yeah. I mean, traffic signs.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I could. That's a possibility.
You know.
Possibility.
Now, are you seeing anybody?
Yeah. So many things. So many nuns and priests I have to work with before then. I mean, there's. I have so many sanctifications to attend. I take these wardrobe things one day at a time.
Now, it's interesting that you're sort of hosting this, because this contest and event, because it sort of, you know, it makes comparisons to itself to the Oscars by saying, like, the 28th annual International Male Leather Contest. You know, and because you are Mr. I mean, you are the man who, the brainchild, I would say, that makes the Oscars and the Tonys watchable.
Wow, thanks.
If it wasn't for your participation in these events as a writer and backstage, you're there, you know, saying, oh, do this, do that. You know, it's like you're always egging people on, right?
Or preventing them
from making mistakes.
They want to go out and say things, and you say, you really shouldn't do that. That probably is not appropriate for this venue.
Does that happen a lot?
And then they go out and they do it anyway, you know, sometimes. And they bomb, and rarely. I mean, so much of what happens on the Oscars is can only happen on the Oscars. I know that sounds like a Vegas commercial, but I mean, the people who were disappointed with Jon Stewart, his fans who watch him every night on the Daily Show, if they expected he was going to come out there and do what he does on the Daily Show every night, they were bound for disappointment because that's just not appropriate. I mean, you figure that out when you get there and you realize this means something to somebody. I mean, their lives will now change. Their whole career could change because of this. And that's the tension that you pick up in the room. Mm-hmm. So it's you just can't kind of go out there and freewheel because they're not going to have it. They're not in the mood for that. You know, as the evening goes on, of course, the room fills up with losers.
Well, did you feel that pressure when you're writing for that? Or
You're just an obstacle in their way to the bar.
Well, do you feel that there's certain pressure when you're actually developing the material for the shows?
For the Oscars?
Yeah, for the Oscars and the Tonys.
Well, the Tonys is a different thing because nobody watches.
But you get the check anyway.
But you still have to be good, though. I mean,
it's a minuscule rating, and the Tonys, the greatest issue is you must be off the air by 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock Central, because the Tonys are in June, which is when commercials don't go for a tremendous amount of money compared to February or March when they do. And as a result, it's easy for the network to sell the Tonys out because anybody who wants to be identified with a theater audience will buy time. So, like, if you're trying to sell Mercedes-Benz, that's a great crowd for you to try to advertise to because they have the money for theater tickets. So they tend to have the money to buy a rich German car. So the commercials are all sold out, but the guy who's running the show in Dubuque, Iowa, on the CBS station there, who's already pissed off because he's not getting a TV movie with Angela Lansbury or whatever usually fills that spot on Sunday nights for them. He just wants you to be off the air by 11 o'clock so his news can go on so he can sell time to the local used car dealer. So he doesn't care what you do as long as you're off the air by 11 o'clock.
So you write a lot of short jokes for it.
Yeah. You just have to keep the show chugging along. So the Tonys is like a big old editing job. Because you're trying to make all these Broadway people happy, and you're trying to make these network affiliates happy, and they have totally different agendas.
Now, have you ever thought about saying, I'm going to hold these jokes hostage and until you let me host the Oscars by myself?
Oh,
because you know you got to get a brother there, a gay man hosting the Oscars. That is, you are the one. I want to propose this right now on the show that next year they give it to you.
Well, you know, fine, go ahead. I mean,
because seriously,
they're going to be like, don't get uppity.
They would have to be scraping the bottom of the diva barrel.
But you know, you're the man who behind the scenes make that event happen. The years that you're not on there, it really does show. And so, you know, it's like people with Oscars are saying, it'd be better to get Bruce Vilanch and make him happy.
Well, all right. I'll sit back benignly and let, like Castro, and let you march me into heaven.
Now, see, I want to bring up something here.
Yes.
I got from the smoking gun.
Uh-huh.
I got the technical requirements in your contract.
Isn't that a riot? You know, we used to joke about slow news days. I'm thinking, my God, what a slow news day for the smoking gun. That the best I could come up with was my contract.
I know. But, let's see. Now, they're wanting to attach a lavalier microphone to your hair. What's up with that? It's like, is that the best way to do it? Or?
Yeah, that is the best way because... because if you have a good lavalier mic, it picks up everything that you say, and that's what they do in the theater. Mm-hmm. When I was in Hairspray for 2 years, they put it right up like over your pituitary gland, so it picks up, of course, your sexual energy. But in addition, to everything you say, if they put it someplace else, like where they generally put microphones on TV, mm-hmm. I have these jowls, and the jowls get in the way. And what you're really saying is you don't want a hand mic. I don't really love prowling the stage with a mic in my hand.
It's like you're holding a penis.
Well, you want to keep both hands free for grabbing.
You got it. Because you never know, there might be somebody in the crowd who I want to fondle.
Do you get to do that? I mean, you know, it's like, because you're one of the most famous gay men.
This particular gig at the IML, I think I might get to do it.
I think so. Are you going to put that into a requirement?
No, I don't want to, you know, ask too much of these boys because, you know, they
can deliver it. They got coin.
That's what I'm afraid of. They may take it. You know,
and honey, they give till it hurts.
You know, I remember the time when they put that rider up. They said, "What do you want in your dressing room?" And I said, "I don't care. I don't know." I said, "String cheese" as a joke. Well, now string cheese is in the contract.
And you got to get like beyond.
There'll be like mountains of string cheese.
Well, see, this is an interesting thing. Is that because I asked who were we asking about Beyonce's contract, where she wanted a bowl of M&Ms with all the green ones taken out, and the reason they put these outrageous things in their contracts is to make sure that they followed all the technical aspects.
Well, that's true, actually. I mean, it's kind of dry, but yeah, you're absolutely right. It's two reasons. One is because if you don't specify exactly what you want, you'll get nothing. I mean, nothing, because everybody is in the profit maximizing business.
Mm. So you think that smoking gun is unfair and like poking fun about that those things?
No, they're just kind of ignorant. I mean, they just take the usual, the broad comedy approach, which isn't this ridiculous, and because on the face of it does look ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And like everybody else, they have a website that they have to update every day. And, you know, they're not going to come across Beyonce and her M&Ms every day. So, some days they're just going to have to really dig deep, and they come up with Bruce Valanche and his string cheese.
Yeah. And so,
it was a joke, and I laughed when I thought, oh, my God, I'm in the smoking gun. Yay.
I know. I'm waiting to get on.
We'll
that
be there soon. Someday.
I'm thrilled. So, I mean, a few months ago, actually, I was the lead item in Defamer, which everybody out here reads, defamer.com. Mm. And it was because I was spotted seeing Brokeback Mountain on the opening day. Duh.
Well, duh. So what did you think of Brokeback? And did we get cheated out from the Oscar? Should it have won Best Picture?
Yeah, of course it should have. But I just wrote a column for The Advocate about it.
So you think Brokeback Mountain was a better film than Crash?
Oh, absolutely.
And why is that?
Well, first of all, I wasn't crazy about Crash. I mean, Crash was a picture where everybody spoke in bumper sticker.
Mm.
I mean, they all had every line everybody had was fraught with meaning, and it was blatant about what it was about. It was everybody in the picture was glib.
Yeah.
It
wasn't the most subtle film.
And it was written by a former sitcom writer. I mean, he's a nice guy. I like him, and he's talented. But I just thought that it was a rather unsubtle take on it, on everything, and Brokeback Mountain, I think, is a great movie, and it's about the reason that it grossed $80 million plus is because it resonated with so many people. It's about repression. It's about not being true to yourself, not being who you are, about the road not taken. It's about a lot of issues that go above and beyond, you know, butt-fucking.
And do you think that gay men are good, the sort of the gay male experience of the 1970s in rural Wyoming is a good way to illustrate that story or that idea?
Yeah, I think it's a great way. You don't?
No, I'm just wanting to know your opinion.
Mean, yeah, obviously, because...
Obviously, I agree with you on this, so...
Yes, I mean, it was Annie Proulx's idea. I mean, she wrote the short story initially. I think it's a brilliant way to express that, because it's kind of like what happens to those guys is a metaphor for what happens to people who don't allow themselves to be who they really are, and who never really allow themselves to find true love because they're so repressed and restricted.
Now, I want to know is, like, you have your finger on the pulse of Hollywood, and since there was a lot of they didn't win as many Oscars as they should have. But, you know, Brokeback Mountain is a terribly successful film, both for the producers, the directors, and the actors, and everybody involved in that movie.
It's successful on every possible count. It would have been nice to have had the Best Picture Oscar, but you have to understand that Crash is a movie that would have been hard for anybody to beat. It's about middle-class Angelenos who were struggling with race and connection. And the Academy is made up of middle-class Angelenos who are struggling with race and connection. And no picture that I can think of has ever played so directly to that particular voting block. I think it would have been hard for Gandhi to have beaten it.
Mm.
I think it would have been hard for The Godfather to have beaten it, because it specifically goes to that kind of audience. That being said, the other thing to remember about the Oscars is that you can win by one vote. It's a small group. It's maybe 6,000 people, and there have been exact ties. And I used to be fond of saying Barbara Streisand won her Oscar because she voted for herself.
And they don't give out the results of
Catherine Hepburn, who was not a member of the Academy and didn't vote. And you know that Barbara voted for herself, and it was an exact tie. So I suspect that's how she won.
So you actually know the numbers? You get a ballot yourself.
Everybody knows the numbers. Pricewaterhouse knows the numbers, but I. After 16 years of doing the show, I've gotten friendly with the Pricewaterhouse people, and what they've told me, they never tell me numbers, but...
And this is off the record, right?
Well, what they say generally is that people all vote for the same two or maybe three nominees, and that four and five get a handful of votes. This is true in the nomination process, too, which is why sometimes you say, well, how did that get nominated? Well, it got one vote more than number six got. And it didn't get a whole lot of votes to begin with. But most people vote for the same two or three. And when something is really close, when there's a close race, the winner generally won by a handful of votes. Well, I suspect the crash won by a handful of votes, and that's interesting to me because there were so many people in the Academy who went public with their disdain of Brokeback Mountain and their refusal to even look at the picture. But I have to think that if a handful of those people, and maybe even only two or three, voted for Crash, that's what put a Crash over.
Why do you think like Tony Curtis was so outraged that there was a gay cowboy movie? Is he hiding a little something or what?
I don't know. I know him. I like him. He's funny. He's a big Bette Midler fan. What does that tell us?
Oh, jeez.
I thought that what he said was unnecessary. But you know, I mean, look at him. I mean, he looks like an old queen, and he tends to rant
like we do.
He does. He whenever he's interviewed, he comes up with the most outrageous opinions. So I don't know. I mean, I suspect that if Tony Curtis had really been gay, we would have heard about it a long time ago because he was in that crop of people who came up when Henry Wilson was was running the young man business in Hollywood, and he was one of the ones who wasn't the Henry Wilson client and wouldn't be.
Now, Bruce, you have your finger on the pulse of Hollywood. I mean, you know the PricewaterhouseCooper people.
I was aiming lower pulse, but
on the balls.
The groin.
It wound
and
up, you know.
Are a lot of male actors...
finding a pulse by accident.
Are a lot of the actors walking around and begging their agent, saying, I want a film where I can really suck some cock in. You know, it's like, get me some Brokeback action and put me on the map like they did with my husband, Jake Gyllenhaal.
Right.
By the way, how is he doing?
Jake?
Yeah.
He lives up the road from me. He's a happy boy.
Oh.
He has two dogs, he's a great guy.
And you're like, Jake, please stop visiting me. I need some privacy.
I know. It's getting on my nerves already. I mean, you know.
Hanging around the house, shirtless.
You get in front of my house.
But is that happening? I mean, a lot of actors saying, give me some Brokeback. You know, so John Travolta is busy.
He's playing a woman. He's not playing a lesbian.
Well,
he's playing a drag queen, though, isn't
he? Yeah, but he's getting some gay action.
He's playing Edna Turnblad. She's a real woman.
But as
a
character that is based on a legendary drag queen, which you yourself played.
I beg to differ.
You're differing.
I played myself for 2 years. It was written as a woman. It's played as a woman. It was played by Divine originally, who was a drag queen, and it's always played by a man because that's part of the message of Hairspray. Hairspray is a movie and a musical about tolerance and acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
It's about accepting yourself for who you are if you're fat. It's about accepting people for who they are if they're fat, if they're black, whatever they are. And the fact that the audience knows that there are two men playing this middle-aged couple plays into the whole idea of the picture. The audience accepts that this is a real couple, even though they know it's a man playing the woman.
So
this is John Waters' fiendish little mind at work.
So do you think John Travolta is a method actor for this film? When
no,
he's going to play?
What John does have for this movie, because he certainly would not be the obvious choice.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of musical comedy chops. You know, I met John when he was a chorus boy in a show with the Andrews Sisters called Over Here, which was a musical hit in the 70s. And he was in that show for about a year, and then he went to Hollywood and got discovered. But he said, what do you think I should do? He was at the Oscars. He said, what do you think I should do as Edna? I said, I think you should think back to what Patty and Maxine Andrews were like. That's a lot what Edna was like, you know?
Yeah.
And he's got that musical comedy background, you know? He's got that energy and the kind of song and dance and that attitude that you get when you're on in a Broadway show.
Now you played.
He will bring mm-hmm. that to the role. I don't know about the rest of it, and I don't know what part Scientology will play.
Well, do you think he's leaving Scientology because there's rumors going around that he's like, you know, being a little bit more aggressive sexually in public places.
I wouldn't know. You know, the thing about John is he never denied that was a part of his life. I mean, after Diana Hyland died, he was living with an actress named Diana Hyland who was older and quite wonderful, and she died of cancer, and he plunged himself into this grief period where he really acted out. And there were a lot of girls and there were a lot of guys, and eventually one of them sold his story to the Inquirer, is a guy named Paul Baresi, who's now a porno producer, who's now also involved in the Pelicano trial. And Paul Baresi sold a story, and Travolta did not deny it. He said, yeah, well, that happened. I did a lot of stuff when I was in grief. I don't do that anymore. So as far as I'm concerned, for what I know, he doesn't do that anymore. He seems to be very devoted to being married and a father and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I
mean, so Scientologists can play female characters in movies then? So can we look forward to Tom Cruise? Or
Scientology rule book. I don't know what you're saying.
I thought everybody in Hollywood was Scientologist.
It kind of scares me. Any religion that administers a personality test before they let you join scares me.
Have you taken one of those personality tests?
I've seen them. I haven't taken them.
They're long. They're 3,000 questions. Do you find yourself outgoing? Yes, maybe, no, sometimes, seldom. And it's like over and over again.
Asked me that before I was Jewish. I mean, they didn't say, okay, you can be bar mitzvahed.
Well, they just cut you the tip of your dick off and then you're Jewish.
That was the initiation.
I think I'd rather take the test if I had to do that over again.
Well, we have a little test for you to take right now.
Uh-huh.
Bruce, it's our celebrity word association. And I want you to get in touch with the goddess within you. So take a deep breath.
She's always here.
And and we're going to give you a word, and you're just going to give us the first word that comes to your mind. So this is a little dangerous, because you might say things you might not want to say.
Okay.
So you prepared?
Okay. I guess. Can I swear like a fool?
Yes. You can swear all you want.
Oh, yeah, you can say anything you want. Okay, first word, mountain.
Hump.
Tina.
Colada.
Cat.
Pussy.
Fat.
Was it fatten or batten?
Fat.
Fat?
Yes, F-A-T.
F-A-T. Me.
Cell phone.
Cancer.
Mother.
Daughter.
Gold.
Horn.
Leather.
Chafes.
Lonely.
Puppy.
Boat.
What was the last one?
Boat.
Boat. Titanic.
Hollywood.
Fabulous.
Boob.
Two.
Let's talk about you being on Celebrity Fit Club. What made you want to go on that TV show? I mean, it's like, why not just get a personal trainer?
They paid me a fortune.
They brought a dump truck full of money to your front lawn?
They did. They just said, take this, you can fuck a cult model on a pile of cash. I was intrigued. Actually, I was doing Hairspray. I'd been doing it for 2 years. I'd lost a little bit of weight, and I was very active because I was doing 8 shows a week and pantyhose and high heels and, you know, all of that. And I knew as I was leaving the show, and I knew once I left the show, I would kind of retreat into severe couch potato-itis. And this offer came along, and I thought, this is like God talking. We're going to pay you a tremendous amount of money to lose weight and to get into better shape. And I thought, how can I say no to this? As a card-carrying Jewish person, how could I say no?
To money.
They were paying you to...
The career? Oh, where do I sign? I didn't even have to become Richard Simmons, you know? I could just be myself. So that was actually what did it. It was a happy confluence of events, and I'm glad I did it.
Oh, did you lose weight?
I lost 25 pounds doing the show, and I've lost some more since then. Mm-hmm. And I discovered aqua aerobics, which is quite fantastic.
My mother does that. She likes it.
It's the greatest, because you have no weight at all in the water, and you actually, if you really do it, you know, you have to have a Nazi in charge.
Now, you sort of got to hang out with some old gal pals of yours, and some not-so-old gal pals, Chastity Bono.
Well, yeah, Chaz I've known since she was a fetus.
And Tempest, Vanessa from The Cosby Show, Bledsoe. Yeah.
Tempest Bledsoe.
And Kelly LeBrock, who don't hate me because I'm beautiful, now hate me because I'm fat.
Right.
Lots of other reasons to hate her now.
So what was the experience in being in this sort of, you know, zoo of D-listers? And
you know, I cheerfully joining them. I loved them. They were terrific. I love the people on the show, and I love the workout and the diet and all that. I hated reality television because it's totally bogus. It's
writer not wanting to pay writers.
Well, you know, that's part of it, but that's a separate issue. I could hate that and not be a part of the show. But I could also, I mean, that'll eventually resolve itself. I mean, the guild will just keep hounding them until they make some kind of a deal. But I just had the concept of it. I mean, it's where the reality television is, where they say to you, "That was great. Could you say that again, but angrier?" And I say, "No, that's called acting. I get paid more for that."
Everything's tweaked.
A lot of time setting up a false reality, setting up what's actually the opposite of reality. They follow you around and they goad you and they want to catch you at your most unpleasant, because they want to create artificial tension for the show.
Like, how do they goad you? Do they, like, off camera, like, they call you names and stuff, or do they?
No, they don't do that. That's paparazzi. that's paparazzi do that all the time. You know, you'll get on the red carpet and they'll say, "Hey, you fat fuck, look," you know, and you'll look to see who said that, and they'll take that picture because they want a picture of you angry or stunned or surprised or something like that.
I mean, do you think that by now, someone like that punches a lot of those paparazzi, you think they'd get it, you know? They'd be like, obviously it's not a personal attack.
Yeah, but it's like anything else. If they catch you at a bad moment, if you're hungry, angry, lonely, tired, or drunk, you're going to react differently because you're vulnerable, and so your defenses are down and whatever, and you'll respond that way. And inevitably, that moment occurs because they are always there. They're always there. They're always on the case. And of course, I suppose there's a panic if they're not there. It's like, why aren't they following me?
So, why isn't anybody insulting me today?
Is my star in the descendant? What's happened?
And do you think that the show is kind of a scam, in a sense, to get Americans who spend too much time and money not eating junk food and watching television, who are unhappy about themselves and their exercise and their bodies, to accept themselves by seeing celebrities struggling in the similar way? Or
yeah, I think, I don't know that that's a scam, but I think that that's the idea behind the show, sure. I mean, any show that involves people getting into shape is about playing on the viewer's feelings about what shape they're in. I mean, The Big Loser is the same show, except it's with the ordinary people who have a lot more to lose.
So you think they're going to be following Robert Downey Jr. soon and be like, sober up, America, or...
If he would say yes, I'm sure they would do it. But I think one of the traditions is you keep yourself anonymous at the level of press and television or media, whatever they call it.
Now, let's go. You've worked with some of the biggest divas in the whole world, right? It's like, mm-hmm. I mean, you're Bette Midler's unofficial ex-husband, right?
I think so. I think I qualify.
You would qualify for that. So, Lemur's just going to give you some divas and just see the ideas on the top of your head. Let's talk about Diana Ross. Do you think she gets a bad rap?
Yeah, I think that, I ran into her on a plane, and I was reading, I had the copy of this book, Call Me Miss Ross.
Oh, you had it on you?
I had it on me.
Oh, God.
And, wow.
And she just sort of looked at it, and I said, you never made me call you Miss Ross. And she said, I've been meaning to speak to you about that. But, okay, she's got a great sense of humor about herself. I think that she's been through a great deal. I mean, she's, you know, a 60-year-old diva now, and she would like to be contemporary. And so I think that I'm sure that a lot of the stuff that happened when she was at her height was true, and she carried on a great deal. I personally never had that experience. I mean, I always had a great time with her. I never saw her do anything crazy like that or be anything less than professional. But I think probably her living, I think it has to do with her living demands were extravagant and crazy, much more so than her work. Her work things. I mean, her work ethic is really pretty strong. She does get a bad rap for all of that.
And what about Madonna and Kabbalah? What's up with that?
Well, what do you do in your life when you turn 40 and you've spent your whole life selling your body and selling sexuality?
You become a Jewish mother.
What will I do?
You have two children, and call me the moment that happens to you. You begin taking journeys elsewhere. You begin, maybe if you're not all that happy with what's going on, you start looking for some kind of other fulfillment. And this was the spiritualism that she was attracted to. I mean, I don't fault her for any of this stuff. I mean, the people who run Kabbalah institutes are not my favorites. They're kind of money-grubbing guys, and I think they're using spirituality as a way to hook celebrities so they can make more money. And that as a Jewish person who's kind of owned Kabbalah for my entire life, I find it kind of abhorrent that that's what these guys do. But as far as her going after her own spiritual oneness, you know, rock on, go for it.
And Whoopi Goldberg is your other ex-wife of yours, or?
Yes. she discovered that she's really a Jewish man and I'm really a black woman. As anybody who's had sex with me will tell you, it was true.
You're like, discovering my Nubian beauty.
That's right, in my Nabataean fullness.
Maria Callas, a real diva, an actual opera diva.
Well, I didn't work with her. She did jokes.
What?
She didn't do jokes.
No. So Montserrat Caballé.
Something on Nassus. She didn't do jokes. I didn't actually work with her. Terrence McNally may.
He did, yeah, actually. You know, my mom and Terrence dated each other in high school. Interesting.
How fabulous.
Isn't that great?
My father dated Bette's mother in high school. Can you believe that? In Paterson, New Jersey.
Wow. Oh, my God. What a small world, huh?
It was amazing when we found out. It was...
So you guys are sort of like long-lost siblings, almost.
We could have been. I mean, we look at each other constantly. We kind of say, this might have happened in a parallel universe.
Right. So you never wrote for Mariah Carey. Now, let's see if these women, do you think, they deserve to be a diva? Or is the word still out on them? Kelly Clarkson?
Oh, the word is still out.
Paris Hilton, obviously. Or...
Well, I mean, you know, she's a diva. She has no discernible talent.
Maybe Whitney Houston.
Being a diva is what she does.
But you could sell her some talent, though, couldn't you?
If I can hit the right garage sale.
You know, she's putting out an album where she's rapping. That's that monstrosity. You know, that's material for you.
Oh, it's not since Ethel Merman's disco album.
Whitney Houston. What is the Whitney?
What? Well,
and the National Enquirer. Did you see that? They took a picture of her bathroom.
Yeah, and
it would look scary, and my bathroom's dirty, but I was
because it was dirty or because of the way she decorated it.
No, it was just like it was full of roaches, and you know, I mean, like
crack pipes or something.
Crack pipes, and there were like Whitney's in desperate times, and you know, she's.
Well, I think that's been pretty clear for a while.
Speaking of other people in desperate times, what do you think about the whole Clay Aiken thing these days?
Have you
been following that at all in the manhunt?
To a degree. I mean, Clay Aiken's always struck me as a character that Marty Short came up with. I've never quite believed that he's real, but I think it's sad that anybody has to hide their sexuality, but unfortunately, he's in the last bastion of areas where you can't be gay. If you're going to sing love songs, and you're going to be an American guy, you can't be gay. You also can't be a gay professional football player, or a baseball player, or a hockey player, or a basketball player, and you can't be an action hero.
Well, do you think that's changing in Hollywood for gay male actors? I mean, certainly you've been very successful, so.
Yes, and I'm going to be. I am the new Indiana Jones. Harrison's finally decided to just, you know, put away the walker and turn it over to somebody else.
Well, do you think it's?
Of course, that's what happens. You know, the only singers who sing love songs who have come out are all British. You can't be an American and do that.
Yeah, but the Brits, they come out and then they go back in the closet. They're back and forth.
Yeah,
but
Robbie.
Do you think, I was looking at your website or a fan site of yours, and there was a lot of pictures of you acting as like a teenager. Was it acting? Was it your first love? And
yeah.
Because you were gay, that you kind of had to go behind the scenes and be a writer instead?
No, it was bigger than that. I was afraid I wouldn't make a living as an actor because I was young and I was big and I was getting character parts and I didn't if I was always auditioning up against guys who were, you know, the real thing and who were 20 years older than I was, so I had a feeling it was going to be a major struggle, and I had this facility for writing and I got lots of job offers, so I thought I would do it that way. And I never stopped the acting, but I put the writing on the front burner because that was where the income was.
Now, what made you create a documentary to get Bruce. Was that sort of reaction to Madonna's Truth or Dare? Or?
It was a friend of mine, Andy Kane, who ran the biggest trailer house. And by that I mean not double wides, but coming attraction previews.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to me one day and he said, I think that there's a great documentary in your life. And I said, oh, I know, it's a shame. And Fellini just died.
I mean, your mother almost steals that film, so.
She's a star.
She's the real star of that movie.
I want to make this movie about what you do. And I said, great, but I can't do anything about it. I said, you can follow me around. I said, but you have to get permission from everybody I work with. And he went ahead and he did that. And I was kind of stunned. The people said yes. I didn't know what he had on them, but they all said yes. I mean, I don't know if he had pictures of them with circus ponies or... but they all said yes, and he went ahead and he did this, and Miramax bought it and took it to Sundance. It was a great adventure. And then what happened, totally by coincidence, was I started doing Hollywood Squares, and the picture came out the second year of Hollywood Squares, and so there was like this publicity blitz, which was very surprising.
Well, what was your take on seeing the documentary? Because you obviously, it was a surprise to you when you saw it in the movie theater.
I think for the one or two people who haven't had documentaries done about them, I could say this: it's you have to prepare yourself for seeing yourself in a parade of hairstyles and weight levels going by if they shoot it over the years, and that's kind of striking. I mean, if you can get over that, and if you can
that's devastating,
back,
isn't it?
That shit that you thought you'd buried years ago comes surfacing. And, you know, I mean, all the stuff about growing up in Jersey, and just when I thought I had a healthy relationship with my mother, here she comes. She becomes a star in a movie about me. So, you know, all these things, and some people will be pissed off at you because you're getting too much publicity. I mean, I was kind of amazed that there were other writers who were annoyed because
how dare he be famous?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like
my attitude was: I think this elevates this, without sounding too ridiculous in my mind. This elevates the stature of all writers. It's that a movie's being made about somebody who does what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But
and how would they get annoyed at you? They would write about it and give you more publicity about it.
It was like the Marquess of Queensberry coming on to Oscar Wilde. Oscar Wilde, you somdomite. That's what he actually called him. He misspelled it.
A somdite.
Somdomite.
Well,
poses as a somdomite.
Mm.
Well, do you think that gay men have an unhealthy, I mean, in general, as a group of people, as a culture in 2006, do we have an unhealthy expectations of our bodies? And, you know, as a full-figured gay male celebrity, what is sort of your take on all that?
I think that partially, I think we always had that, but there was less emphasis on it. I think one reason was because There were less of us out practicing that kind of thing, and I think that also what happened was when AIDS came about, and the focus of the gay community shifted away from gay bars and into other areas, and specifically landed on gyms. I think that that cult kind of began, and. So I just think it was just a combination of a bunch of things that happened, and suddenly that became the predominant thing. And I'm sure the internet certainly hustled it along, because, you know, what better place to send pictures of people than? And if it's all about looks, then, you know, it's going to be about that. It's going to be about a certain kind of beauty.
So are you retouching your pictures in Photoshop and sending them out on Manhunt and? Like Clay Aiken did, or
yeah, absolutely. I'm doing it all. I mean, I look more like Brad Pitt now than ever.
All you need is what's your little Photoshop technique, Fausto? The Gaussian blur.
Oh,
and
yes, Gaussian blur and overlay. It erases all the wrinkles, and it takes 10 pounds off of your face.
Wow,
it's fabulous.
Put some wear on your dick.
Well, we got a beautiful headshot of you taken by from VH1.
Ooh. Nice.
So we're going to use that on our website, feastoffools.net. And we want to thank you so much for talking to us.
Well, certainly.
You're absolutely the most wonderful, loving person, and We want to wish you so much success here in Chicago at IML. I hope they don't treat you too rough.
Maybe that's what I'll do. Maybe I'll sing that song.
So we got one last thing is we want to do a sort of short answers from you. It's our teen magazine profile. Because you're sort of a heartthrob to certain, you know, the mirth and girth type crowd. You're a poster boy.
Yeah.
So we want to ask you sort of a profile things, of little things, you know, little things that they may not know about you.
Right.
So first question I have is, what is your favorite color, Bruce?
My favorite color? Pink.
What is your... Pink? A wonderful color. What is your age in relation to Larry King?
Oh, I'm 3,000 years younger.
What's your body type?
How I would describe my body or what I would...
Yeah, what's your body type? What is your answer to that question?
My body type? It's sort of like, it's just, oh God, mid-century sofa.
What's your best feature?
My best feature? It's either my huge dick or my hair. I can't decide which.
And what turns you on in another guy or girl?
What turns me on? if they say yes.
What's your favorite type of sushi?
My favorite type of sushi? Believe it or not, I like octopus.
Ooh, that's a very personality telling there.
I know, it's chewing rubber, which I don't like doing another thing.
What's on your iPod?
I don't have an iPod.
Okay, what's on your CD player or boombox or on your cassette tapes? Or what's on your 8-track?
Your reel-to-reel.
Yeah, usually, I'm very eclectic. It's obviously I'm a million show tunes, and at the moment I'm listening to Janis Siegel's new album. She was one of the singers from Manhattan Transfer, and she's got a jazz album. So, but I mean, I'm very eclectic. I listen to everything except hip-hop.
Okay. What's the best thing that happened to you in 2005?
The best thing that happened to me in 2005? I lost weight.
And in 2006 so far, what's the worst thing that's happened to you?
What's the worst thing that's happened to me? God, let me think. I don't know. What is the worst thing?
Besides this interview.
Besides this interview? I haven't thought about it. I mean, I have a leaking foundation, but in my house, which is going to be a lot of aggravation.
Well, just get some Depends.
You know, that's just temporal, so.
Well, that's good. Your favorite movie?
My personal favorite movie, this sounds crazy. People have forgotten this movie. It's called Tom Jones.
Oh, I think I remember that. Ryan O'Neill?
No, that's Barry Lyndon.
Okay.
But it's the same period. It's Albert Finney and a bunch of wonderful British actors. Okay. Won the Oscar, I think, in 1964 for this picture.
Favorite snack?
It's always been a particular favorite of mine.
Okay. Favorite snack?
Favorite snack? Oh, popcorn.
What was the name of... Did you have a pet when you were a kid, and what was its name, and was it a species?
I had a Cocker Spaniel named Lucky. It turned out not to be. I can't go into it.
What instruments do you play?
What instruments do I play? Mm-hmm. Skin flute.
What was your first love?
What was my first love?
Yeah.
Show business.
Okay. If your vagina wrote its own monologue, what would it say?
Feed me.
What kind of drink do you make for your guests when they come over to your house?
shared spit.
What's your worst childhood experience?
Oh, I mean, it's still going on.
Okay.
What was the most annoying thing about Hollywood to you?
The most annoying thing about Hollywood to me? Stereotyping.
Okay. What's your biggest waste of money?
Boys.
Okay, and who is your favorite full-figured celebrity?
My favorite full-figured...
Besides yourself.
Besides myself, my favorite full-figured celebrity. It's such a loaded question. I mean...
Who do you think about who's just big, fat, and beautiful?
It doesn't have to be beautiful, just favorite.
Or your favorite. You're like, I can't.
Who can resist Anna Nicole?
And don't say Bette Midler because she'll
Anna
smack
Nicole
you.
Smith.
I mean, you know, Anna Nicole Smith is a show, but I'm very partial to Doris Roberts.
What gets you high?
All the standard equipment.
This is a little Barbara Walters question for you. If you could be a twee,
yes.
What kind of twee would you be?
Palm.
And then last but not
very
least.
Tall with big nuts.
Do you believe in God or life after death?
Yeah, I do. And I don't know, but I don't know what it is.
Okay, and last question for us. If we sent you a Feast of Fools t-shirt to wear, how many X's need to be in that t-shirt?
Two.
Okay.
Well,
thank
you so much, Bruce.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. And that was Bruce Valanche.
He's a comedy writer and entertainer. And
actor.
He also was starred on Hairspray on Broadway. You could have seen him on Hollywood Squares as a center square for a couple of seasons or shows. And, of course, he's the man who makes the Oscars and the Tonys watchable as a writer behind the scenes.
He writes for Bette, for Whoopi, for Lily.
For everybody.
All your favorites.
So he's going to be here in Chicago that Sunday, May 28th, at the International Mr. Leather 2006 contest. And he'll be headlining it at the Chicago Theater. So you can go to feastoffools.net and click on the link to buy your tickets, if that's your kind of thing. And watch the, you know, I mean, it's really worth getting going into the event just to see Bruce Valanche.
It's the Oscars of the leather. It's like
it's
the Oscars
of the leather world.
Meets Miss America or Miss Universe meets leather meets.
Meets a lot
everything.
Of things. And Bruce Valanche will be there in the center wearing a fabulous t-shirt, one of his t-shirts from, you know, thousands and thousands of his collection. So that's just going to be fantastic. And we're certainly looking forward to seeing him there. And we want to remind you to visit our website, feastoffools.net.
Yeah, if you like the show or if you have anything to say about Bruce Valanche, leave it on the comments site.
He will
for
read those.
He will read them.
The girl has broadband.
Yes, she does. Or if you'd like to email us, please email us at feastoffools@gmail.com. And I'd like to remind you, too, that we do have a MySpace account, myspace.com/feastoffools. And if you're on MySpace, connect with us. Be our friend.
And we are also on Friendster at Feast of Fools as well. And you can AOL Instant Messenger us whenever we're online and talk to us directly. Tell us what you think about our show at Feast of Fools, the number 4, the letter U, Feast of Fools for you. You can also go to iTunes and write a review of our show and tell the people, the man at Apple, tell Steve Jobs how much you appreciate our programming. Yeah. I'm Fausto Fernos.
And I'm Mark Fillion.
Reminding you that, as Miss Ronnie would say, make every day count. Fearlessly be yourself. You hear me, Jake Gyllenhaal? I'm waiting for you to pay me a visit.
And keep it real.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's not hard to say that the market dictates emotion when you got to re-multiply the quotient by the dividends. Still, I wasn't willing to pay for a vanity on the hour, only hoping to retain the power for the one who spends. Credit that you live rich against the whole future, faith. Credit that you live rich against your divorcee.